Welcome to IP Management Voice, the podcast spotlighting leading minds in IP and IP management. This series supports the IP Business Academy's call for subject matter experts to share insights, foster reflection, and strengthen the global IP system. Join the conversation via our newsletter and explore cutting-edge content on DPLEX. The content in this episode, which focuses on operational IP management for fast-paced industry, comes from Per Wenden.
Welcome to the deep dive. You know, when we hear intellectual property or IP, the mind often drifts to like complex legal texts, maybe some dramatic courtroom scenes.
Yeah, or just a dusty filing cabinet somewhere in the legal department. Feels really abstract, right? Kind of distant.
Totally distant. Like a cost center you just try to avoid dealing with. But here's the thing, and it's kind of startling. In today's incredibly dynamic industrial world, IP has fundamentally shifted.
It really has.
It's just not that reactive legal afterthought anymore. It's actually a vital, proactive part of daily business operations.
Exactly.
So our mission today is really to pull back the curtain on this evolution. We want to explore how IP management has become, well, a strategic discipline, deeply integrated into every single stage of a company's journey. You know, from that first idea.
Right. From the initial spark.
All the way to, you know, winning in the market.
And what's truly transformative here, I think, is that we're way beyond just, say, filing patents or arguing in court. This is about making IP a powerful, proactive engine for sustainable growth. I mean, innovation cycles are getting faster. Global competition is intense.
It's relentless.
It is. So the goal now is making sure every single IP action, every decision, serves a clear business objective. It's about building IP right into the company's operational DNA, making it an everyday tool for getting ahead.
That's a really significant reframing. So let's peel back the layers on this new reality of IP then, moving beyond just that, you know, that legal department silo. You mentioned operational IP management or OIPM. What does that actually look like on the ground for a company? What does it do?
Okay, so at its core, operational IP management is all about integrating IP decisions directly into the fabric of a company's daily stuff, the day-to-day activities.
Right.
Imagine your R&D team. They're developing some groundbreaking feature. OIPM ensures that innovation gets protected early, not just when it's, you know, ready for market.
So not waiting until the last minute.
Definitely not. It means critical product features are backed by what we sometimes call prohibitive rights. Think of it like putting a protective fence around your best ideas.
Making it harder for competitors.
Exactly. Making it difficult for others to use them without permission. And importantly, throughout the entire development and commercialization process, legal risks are actively minimized. You're constantly scanning for them.
Gotcha. So it's not just about creating a great product anymore. It's about actively making sure no one else can easily copy your key innovations. That feels like a huge shift from being reactive to being, well, proactively protective.
Precisely. And this is particularly vital for, say, industrial companies. They're often grappling with global R&D teams.
Spread all over the place.
Yeah, incredibly complex supply chains, highly technical products, and often these vast aging IP portfolios that can get bloated and really costly.
Right, legacy stuff.
Exactly. Operational IP management directly addresses these specific challenges. It helps align IP strategies with technical roadmaps. It integrates protection workflows right into the R&D process seamlessly.
Yeah.
And it constantly monitors risks across a product's entire lifecycle.
It's like making sure your legal compass and your engineering engine are pointing the same way.
That's a great analogy. Yeah. And this really demands cross-functional collaboration, open communication, and frankly, a higher level of IP awareness across different departments.
So it's not about turning engineers into lawyers.
Definitely not. It's about making IP a natural, almost intuitive part of those industrial workflows. And it also means regular strategic portfolio reviews. Those are absolutely key for cost control and making sure every IP asset you hold actually supports some kind of commercial impact.
So the big takeaway here is really speed and confidence. It connects those crucial legal thoughts with, the gritty realities of R&D, allowing you to protect what truly matters without slowing down the very innovation you're trying to safeguard in the first place.
Exactly. It empowers informed decision-making at every level.
Yeah.
You know, from the lab bench right up to the boardroom.
Okay, that clarifies the what pretty well. But how do we actually build this strategic capability? Our research suggests there are four interconnected pillars that form a solid operational IP strategy. What are these foundational elements? How do they fit together?
Right. Think of these as the four cornerstones for a really successful IP strategy. First, it's about aligning IP with business strategy. That's your North Star.
Okay.
Second, leveraging IP to fuel business growth. That's kind of your engine.
Right.
Third, scrutinizing the competitive IP landscape. That's your radar.
Keeping an eye out.
Exactly. And finally, creating a transparent financial overview of IP that's like your scorecard.
Makes sense.
Together, these pillars really transform IP from just being a cost center into a core strategic asset.
Let's dig into the first one then. Developing an IP strategy based on the business strategy.
Okay. So IP can never exist in a vacuum. It absolutely must flow directly from your main business goals.
Whatever those might be.
Right. Are you aiming for rapid scaling? Entering new international markets? Maybe differentiating your product through some cutting-edge tech? Or perhaps licensing out your innovations? These strategic intentions, they dictate every IP decision you make.
Can you give an example?
Sure. Think about a B2B company. Maybe they're focused on proprietary manufacturing processes. Their unique value is in how they make things.
Okay.
So they might prioritize trade secrets and maybe process patents. That's where their differentiation lies. But contrast that with a consumer brand, you know, thriving on design and user experience.
Like Apple, maybe.
Perhaps. They'd naturally put their focus on things like design rights and trademarks. The key question isn't just, what can we protect? It's shifted to, what do we need to protect to support where the business is actually going?
So it's about enabling the strategy, not just ticking a legal box.
Precisely. Ensuring IP is a strategic enabler.
Okay, so once we know where the business is headed and what we need to protect, how does IP actually enable that growth? Sounds like we're moving beyond just defense here. Which brings us to pillar two, how to use IP to support the business strategy.
Exactly right. This pillar is all about using IP beyond just being a defensive shield. Patents, for example, sure, they could be powerful barriers to entry, making it tough for competitors to copy you.
The traditional view.
But they can also be used more offensively, maybe to gain access to technologies through cross-licensing deals, or to generate direct revenue through licensing out, or even just to significantly strengthen your negotiation position in partnerships or M&A.
Interesting. What about other IP types?
Well, trademarks are absolutely central to expanding your brand into new product lines or markets.
Mm-hmm.
And we often identify specific IP use cases, things like actively blocking competitors, sure, but also securing your own freedom to operate, making sure you don't inadvertently infringe on someone else's rights.
Ah, that FTO check again?
That FTO check. It's crucial. Or enabling open innovation with partners. Or maybe just delaying imitation long enough to maintain your market lead. A really critical aspect here is preventing legal setbacks before they happen.
Avoiding those nasty surprises.
Exactly. Imagine launching a new product. You've invested millions, only to find out you're infringing an existing patent. Doing those freedom to operate analyses before product launches is just essential to avoid those incredibly costly disputes later on. It's like, well, checking the weather before you set sail.
Makes perfect sense. And of course, no company operates in a vacuum, right? Which logically leads us to the third pillar, analyzing the competitive IP landscape. You absolutely have to know what your rivals are up to. What does that look like in practice?
You got it. This involves systematically identifying all the key players in your space, direct competitors, obviously, but also key suppliers, maybe customers who could become competitors, or even those emerging startups.
The disruptors.
The potential disruptors. Then you meticulously examine their IP activity. What are they patenting? Where are they filing? How fast is their portfolio growing? Are they involved in a lot of litigation or maybe licensing aggressively?
How do you even track all that?
Well, patent analytics tools are invaluable here. Yeah. You look for patterns like a sudden spike in competitor filings might signal they're about to launch something new or maybe making a big strategic pivot.
Or a gap.
Or conversely, a noticeable absence of IP in a specific technical area could reveal a white spot, a clear opportunity for your company to jump in and innovate, maybe even dominate that niche. So this analysis is both defensive assessing risks and offensive identifying expired rights you might use or finding potential licensing partners. It's like having an early warning system and a treasure map rolled into one.
Okay, that's powerful. Now, the fourth pillar, creating a financial overview of IT activities. This sounds important, but maybe less glamorous.
Maybe less glamorous, but absolutely critical. Often, IP budgets are just seen as this fixed cost, right? A necessary evil.
It's just a line item.
But in a strategically managed organization, there are strategic decisions. Every single dollar spent on IP should be justifiable. It should contribute directly to mitigating risk, creating value, or aligning with the company's goals.
So tying the spend to the outcome.
Exactly. Linking IP investments directly to tangible outcomes. For example, how much did we spend on patents for that new product line? And how do those patents directly support market exclusivity or maybe allow for premium pricing? You need to quantify the direct benefits, like licensing revenue, sure, but also the indirect ones.
Like what?
Like maybe a higher company valuation or faster market adoption because you've got exclusivity or just significantly reduced legal risk. This kind of transparent financial planning also supports strategic pruning of your IP portfolio.
Pruning? Like gardening.
Exactly like gardening. You cut away the obsolete or overly costly assets, the dead branches, to free up resources for more impactful growing filings. It forces you to ask that important question for every IP dollar. Is this truly justified by its contribution to our strategic goals? Or is it just, you know, a legacy cost we keep paying?
Okay, so those are the four strategic pillars. A solid foundation. But the real challenge, as you hinted, often comes in the, let's say, the trenches. How do companies actually embed this IP thinking into the daily work of their researchers, their developers, their managers? What's the operational playbook for getting this done?
Right. If the pillars are your strategic blueprint, these next four dimensions are the operational guide, how you actually put that blueprint into action day to day. They cover aligning R&D and IP strategies, integrating IP into the innovation lifecycle, protecting IP during development, and crucially, avoiding the development of IP-infringing solutions. These are the daily operational rhythms, if you like.
Got it. Let's start with aligning R&D and IP strategies.
Okay. For this first dimension, it's absolutely vital that IP professionals are involved right from the earliest stages of research planning, not just brought in at the very end of a project when things are almost finished.
I can see how that would cause problems.
Oh, it does. I've seen companies spend years, millions on R&D, only to realize way too late that their big innovation isn't actually protectable. Or maybe they've already disclosed it publicly and lost the rights.
Ouch.
Big ouch. So R&D leaders should be actively thinking about areas important for IP protection when they're setting research directions. And budget planning for R&D projects must include resources for things like patent searches or maybe planning for trade secret protection. Again, it isn't about making engineers IP experts.
Right.
But making sure R&D teams understand the basic implications. What kind of things are protectable? What disclosure risks should they avoid? How do these IP decisions ultimately impact commercialization and market opportunity down the line?
Okay, but how do you ensure IP isn't just an add-on task, but really built into the innovation workflow itself? What are the practical steps there? That sounds like dimension two, integrating IP and innovation processes.
Yeah, exactly. It starts with having structured processes that make IP feel like a natural step, not a burden. This means clear, accessible ways for researchers to submit invention disclosures.
Making it easy for them.
Making it easy. So they can easily submit new ideas for IP evaluation, capturing all the technical details and potential uses. Then, after that disclosure, a collaborative review is essential. You need technical experts, IP pros, sometimes commercial teams, all looking at it together.
To explore all the options.
To explore all protection options, patents, trade secrets, design rights, maybe copyright. Because, you know, no single IT type is a silver bullet for everything.
Right.
And it's critical to embed IP checkpoints into project milestones. You know, those stage gates in product development.
Right, the go-no-go points.
Exactly. At those points, teams should actively ask, are our key features protected? Are there freedom to operate risks we need to deal with? Do we need to check what competitors are doing right now? Things like robust IP management software, integration with project management tools, and continuous targeted training programs, they all help make IP a seamless part of innovation, not some separate thing tacked on at the end.
Okay, so you're integrating it.
Hey, are you an IP expert with a focus topic you want to share? Then you might be just the right fit to become an IP subject matter expert at the IP Business Academy. It's a great opportunity to build visibility for your expertise and reach new clients through a trusted academic platform. You'll be supported in creating digital content, LinkedIn strategies, and outreach to your target group. If you're ready to raise your profile and position yourself as a thought leader, get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. End of advertisement.
Now, what about dimension three? Protecting IP during the innovation process itself. Collaboration is key, but it also sounds risky.
It can be. Innovation thrives on collaboration, absolutely, but collaboration can also be a huge risk for IP leakage or, you know, accidentally disclosing something sensitive if it's not managed carefully. A key challenge here is timing IP filings.
When do you file?
Exactly. File too early, your claims might be weak or incomplete, you waste money. File too late, you risk public disclosure happening first, and then you lose your rights entirely. IP experts need to work with the teams to find that sweet spot, sometimes called the golden window.
And dealing with partners. Suppliers.
For any external collaborations, contracts are just paramount. NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, joint development agreements, specific IP clauses in supplier contracts. They all need to clearly define who owns what and maintain confidentiality. Internally, it's about employee awareness, clear policies on things like keeping good lab notebooks, and secure data storage, especially vital for safeguarding valuable trade secrets. And you also have to keep an eye on external risks, like monitoring competitor filings, to proactively prevent others from cornering the market before you're ready.
Right. Now, this next one seems huge. Dimension 4. Avoiding the development of IP infringing solutions. Accidentally stepping on someone else's IP sounds like a nightmare. I remember reading about a startup that got completely shut down because of this exact issue. How do you prevent that?
It is a real nightmare scenario, and that's why this dimension is so critical. It really comes down to systematic freedom to operate FTO searches and doing them early and continuously throughout the development process.
Not just once at the beginning.
Definitely not. This helps you figure out if your planned product or process might infringe on existing third-party rights, which allows you to make crucial adjustments before you've sunk significant resources into it. But beyond the searches, there's a huge cultural aspect, too.
Culture. How so?
Training developers to respect IP boundaries. Advising them against just trying to design around a patent they found without getting legal counsel involved first. Making sure they thoroughly check the licenses for any open source code they want to use. In some industries, you have these complex patent thickets.
Dense webs of patents.
Yeah, really dense webs of overlapping rights, making it incredibly tricky to navigate. In those cases, companies might need to think about strategic licensing, cross-licensing, or maybe even acquiring key patents just to clear a path. And remember, infringement risks aren't just about technology.
Ah, right. Branding, too.
Branding, marketing. Legal checks have to cover product names, packaging designs, advertising slogans to avoid really costly trademark disputes down the road. It's all about innovating responsibly within clear, understood legal boundaries.
Okay, so IP is now deeply integrated into innovation. You're building up this treasure chest of patents, trademarks, designs. How do companies actually manage the sheer volume of all that? It sounds like you really need a system just to keep track.
You absolutely do. And that leads us perfectly into managing the assets. Operational IP portfolio management and protecting products. Basically, operational IP portfolio management is a structured, data-driven, and strategically integrated way to continuously monitor, evaluate, and make smart decisions about all your IP assets.
Keeping it organized and effective.
Exactly. It ensures every asset supports a business goal, that resources are invested wisely, and just as importantly, that irrelevant IP is strategically removed, keeping your portfolio lean, powerful, and aligned.
So how does that start? With an inventory?
It starts with the management of the IP inventory. But think of it not just as a simple list, but more like a living database of everything the company owns intellectually.
What goes in there?
Everything. Patents, trademarks, utility models, design rights, domain names, registered trade secrets, all your licensing agreements, in and out. Each asset needs meticulous tracking. Its legal status, where it's protected geographically, who owns it, which products or services it's linked to, what it costs to maintain year after year, and even its historical performance, if relevant.
That's a lot of detail.
It is, but it provides unparalleled transparency. And it allows you to categorize assets by their function. Is this one primarily for blocking competitors? Is that one for brand differentiation? Does this generate licensing income? Is that one purely defensive? Without this clarity, companies really risk losing control, missing critical deadlines, paying for IP they don't need. It's like having a cluttered attic versus a well-organized workshop.
Okay, inventory managed. What's next in portfolio management?
Next is constantly monitoring strategic alignment of the IP portfolio. Your IP rights should never just exist for their own sake. They must align with your evolving company goals.
As the business changes, the IP needs might change too.
Precisely. Are you expanding into new countries? Undergoing a big digital transformation? Competing mainly on technology leadership? Or is brand recognition more critical now? These shifting priorities should dictate your IP needs. This means actively mapping your IP assets to specific business units, products, technologies, and markets. And crucially, engaging non-IP stakeholders, people in business development, marketing, R&D, to get their input on what's valuable from their perspective.
And how often do you check this alignment?
Regular reviews are essential. Ideally quarterly, maybe biannually. These reviews help identify gaps where you need protection, redundancies where you might have overlapping rights, or obsolete assets that are just costing money. It allows for proactive portfolio shaping, not just reacting.
That sounds like a ton of internal tracking and data. How do you possibly translate all that complexity into something clear and actionable for decision makers? You know, the executives who might not be IP experts. That must be where reporting of IP needs comes in.
It's exactly right. Effective reporting is the bridge. It translates all that complexity into clear, actionable information. Good reports should provide a current snapshot of the IP situation, highlight any recent important changes, and pinpoint identified gaps or opportunities. For instance, maybe a new product line urgently needs patent protection in a critical market like China or the U.S.
And the money.
Absolutely. Crucially, good reporting always includes a robust financial dimension. It links transparent costs, filing fees, attorney fees, maintenance fees, to quantifiable business benefits. This helps management actually assess the return on their IP investment. Are we getting value for this spend? The reports themselves should be concise, probably highly visual, and definitely tailored to the audience. Senior execs need high-level summaries. IP teams need the nitty-gritty details. It's about giving them the so what in a language they understand and can act on.
Okay, so you've got the inventory, checked the alignment, reported the needs. What's the really strategic part?
The most strategic element of all, I'd argue, is investing in versus divesting of IP assets. This is where you make those critical, sometimes tough decisions about where to commit your precious resources, time, and money, and where to pull back.
So what does investing look like?
Investing means things like filing new patent applications, expanding existing rights into new countries, maybe actively enforcing those rights against infringers, or integrating IP more deeply into new business models.
And divesting?
Divesting means strategically deciding to abandon obsolete or overly costly assets, stop paying those maintenance fees, or maybe licensing outrights that aren't core to your business anymore to generate income, or even selling patents outright that no longer fit your core strategy.
How do you decide?
These decisions need to be based on clear criteria. You weigh value indicators like how relevant is this patent to current products? What's its licensing potential? How broad is its market coverage? How strong is it legally against the ongoing costs? If you connect this to the bigger picture, a really healthy IP portfolio is dynamic. It grows vigorously in areas of opportunity and shrinks purposefully in areas of decline. It's all about adaptive strategic management, not just endless accumulation.
Okay, let's pivot slightly and talk about the products themselves. We've talked portfolio, but how do you decide which specific features within a single product actually need protection and with what kind of IP? How do you turn that cool innovation into a fortress of exclusivity?
Yeah, that's really where the rubber meets the road, is the art and science of turning innovation into exclusivity by precisely identifying a product's unique, valuable features. You break the product down, what's its core technical functionality, what's unique about the user interface, what about the brand elements or the overall design aesthetic.
And then you match the IP type.
And then you match the right IP type to that specific feature. So patents protect the technical inventions, the clever mechanical bits, the software algorithm that solves a real problem, maybe a new chemical composition or a unique manufacturing process. Design rights safeguard the appearance, the shape, the look and feel, the patterns that make a product visually distinctive.
What else?
Trademarks protect your brand elements. Names, logos, slogans, maybe even specific colors or sounds associated with your brand. Copyright defends original creative works like software code itself or unique graphics and manuals. And then there are trade secrets, which protect confidential information that gives you a competitive edge, things like secret manufacturing know-how, proprietary algorithms, maybe customer lists or source code that you don't want public.
Can you use more than one?
Oh, absolutely. Often the most robust strategy is what we call a layered approach, using multiple IP types to protect different aspects of a single product. That creates a really formidable barrier against copying.
Okay, that layered approach sounds powerful, but also potentially complex to decide on. Are there specific guidelines companies follow, a decision-making guideline for the protection of product features?
Yes, it should be a systematic process, typically involving five key steps. First, you assess the feature's importance to the business. Is this a key differentiator that really drives sales, or is it a more foundational technology?
How critical is it?
Exactly. Second, you determine its visibility and vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something easily copied just by looking at the product, or is it something internal you could potentially keep as a trade secret? Third, you evaluate its protectability. Can we actually meet the legal thresholds for novelty, originality, or distinctiveness? Not everything can be protected, remember. Fourth, you consider the cost and timing. Balance the expense of getting and maintaining protection against the expected commercial benefits and how quickly you need that protection in place. Filing patents isn't cheap or instant. And fifth, you define the geographic scope. Where do you really need this protection? Focus your efforts. Sales and business development often have invaluable insights from the front lines, what features customers really value, where they're seeing competitor copying attempts, what the market needs next. This collaboration is also crucial for aligning product launch timelines with IP filings. You absolutely want to avoid losing rights because someone disclosed the invention too early before filing.
So how do you make that collaboration work smoothly?
Strategies like holding regular IP review meetings that include people from different functions, having clear, simple invention disclosure processes, providing ongoing IP awareness training tailored for non-legal teams,
yeah,
and maybe even embedding IP checkpoints directly into product development checklists. It's about making it everyone's responsibility, creating a kind of cross-functional IP symphony.
So bringing this all together, what does this really mean for you, the listener? Whether you're an engineer, maybe a product manager, maybe CEO, it sounds like IP isn't just that defensive shield you pull out in emergencies anymore.
Not at all.
It's actually a dynamic lever for growth, for competitiveness, and for creating real, tangible value in today's super intense, innovation-driven market.
Exactly. This whole operational approach truly shifts IP from being seen as just a cost factor to becoming a core capability. It provides ideally unparalleled control, transparency, and alignment right across the entire organization. It empowers businesses to innovate with more confidence and to grow with real strategic foresight in what's becoming an increasingly intangible economy. It really prepares them not just to compete, but potentially to lead their industries.
So here's a final thought to leave you with. In a world where differentiation can be incredibly short-lived and imitation is just lightning fast, how much of your product's long-term success, maybe even its very survival, hinges on truly understanding and actively managing its intellectual DNA? Think about that.
Thanks for listening to IP Management Voice. If there's any topic you'd like us to cover in this podcast or on the content platform Dplex, please get in contact and let us know.